And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. Wild Week 11 in the books. Tom Fornelli joins me so that we can review the wreckage from a weekend that saw number 2, 3, and 4 all go down. Guys, we only got 3 weeks left until Selection Sunday, and the college football playoff picture is as messy as ever. We take a look around, conference by conference, starting in the SEC. What needs to happen for each of these leagues to get a team in the playoff? Make sure that you are subscribed to the SEC on CBS podcast so that you can get episodes first, and enjoy Tom Fornelli. At the beginning of every single week, we here at the SEC on CBS podcast gather together. Tom Fornelli, hello Tom. Tom joins me, and we review the wreckage. And looking back on week 11, Tom, there was a lot of wreckage, a lot of teams lost, and the only constant in our college football universe, our college football and real worlds have been spun on their heads, unexpected results all over the place, but there's one thing that I can have my faith in, Tom, and you know what that is?
It's what I told you last week you could have faith in.
It's the Alabama Crimson Tide ruling the college football world.
Yeah, well, this is what we spent last week talking about. I tried to tell you, but you didn't want to listen, Chip. You wanted to believe that somebody else out there actually had a chance.
So Auburn had a chance. Auburn had a great chance.
It's gone now, son.
It is gone now. Alabama Crimson Tide, as we sit here recording on November 14th, are the SEC West champions. That's locked up. So we are really looking at a situation where the Tide have a playoff spot all but locked up, and any result that does not have Alabama winning the SEC championship and getting into the college football playoff means something very, very bad has happened for Alabama. Auburn does still get a crack at the Tide in the Iron Bowl, but even if they win that game, they will not win the SEC West. That would hurt Alabama's playoff chances, though I still like the Tide to be able to make it, as long like they would have to lose against Auburn and Florida, I think, to play themselves out at this point.
Yeah, they have to lose twice. I think it sets up for a fun idea of like the ultimate rival troll move, where Alabama, if it wants to, can play its second string against Auburn in the Iron Bowl.
Probably still win.
And see if its second string can beat Auburn. So that way, if it wins, it could say, we literally beat you with our bench. Or if it loses, it could say, well, we played you with our bench, and it didn't matter because we're still going to go to the SEC title game, and if we win that, we go to the playoff. So I wish that, you know, if I'm Nick Saban, which there's no chance in hell he would ever consider doing it, but I just think it would be a fun idea. If I coached Alabama, being me, I would greatly consider starting my bench against Auburn and trying to beat them with my reserves.
Well, for a team full of pros and a head coach that, although not totally successful, has NFL experience, this is like week 17, baby.
Yeah.
You already got your playoff spot locked up. Might as well rest the starters and work on building that depth.
I mean, there's only two undefeated teams left, and the other one's Western Michigan. So Alabama has to lose twice to miss the playoff, and even then, it still might have a shot.
What do you make by the way, I'm absolutely going to put the SoundCloud player. I think I'm going to make the headline of it, should Alabama rest its starters against Auburn, and just sort of see what happens.
Hell yeah, let's do that.
All right, so this Auburn team, and a real football reason, not just us being funny and telling jokes, a real football reason to even discuss that matchup in such light is that Auburn's in trouble right now. This offense was frozen in Athens. They get one touchdown in the beginning and just shut out the rest of the way. Do you credit this, Tom, to a great effort, preparation, and performance by Kirby Smart in Georgia? I think I mentioned even during the game, or maybe it was in the SEC Live blog, like there were a couple times when Auburn's offense looked like they were trying to make that one home run play. You know, the Gus Malzahn offense has about five or six really, really good, well set up plays. And whether it was dropped passes, failure of execution, Sean White looked lost. Bad throws all over the place. Do you look at Auburn and say this is a bad sign of where Auburn is? Or are you going to give some credit to Georgia for being able to slow down an offense that, to this point, even with Kerryon Johnson, you know, Kerryon Johnson was running the ball well at the beginning of the season before he got hurt. Sure, Pettway's not in the game, but I don't think that the absence of Pettway really describes all of the issues that Auburn's offense has right now.
Yeah, Sean White has mentioned since the loss on Saturday, he's implied that he might be hurt, and I hope he's hurt, not... I don't hope he's hurt.
You don't wish ill will on this young man.
Yeah, but based on the way he played in that game, I hope he's hurt.
It would explain a lot. Yeah.
Because if that's 100% healthy, that's a problem. I give some credit to Georgia. I think it was you who mentioned it on the Picks Pod last week. You know, Kirby Smart coming from Alabama, if there's one thing he's been able to, you know, very familiar with these last few years, it's been to know how to slow down Auburn's offense. So I think you have to give Georgia some credit. I mean, they held Auburn to only 4 yards a carry in this game, but Auburn had absolutely no hope passing the ball through the air. Kerryon Johnson was the better quarterback in this game. He threw two passes. He completed both of them.
Versatile player. Real versatile.
Yeah. I mean, it's... And the other thing, too, is Sean White was 6 for 20 for 27 yards, averaging 1.4 yards an attempt. And John Franklin III still couldn't get out there to throw some passes.
Yo, I think that Auburn might be in the market for the transfer quarterbacks this offseason.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. But just going back to Georgia, I mean, yeah, you have to give that defense credit, but I think it was a 50-50 mix of Auburn's offense just being really bad and Georgia's defense taking advantage of it.
We had in the SEC East, Florida, a performance that was encouraging to a point, and I'll say that. I think the first half looked good. I'm not 100% bought in that the Austin Appleby experience is going to be as great as it sort of seems that Gator Nation and the Florida fans have latched on to his play against South Carolina as an example for the fact that this offense, already down to its backup quarterback, like it was a year ago as Freon Harris, that this offense is in a better position now than the Gators offense, which was also struggling heading into the SEC championship game last year.
Yeah, Appleby played well. I mean, if you look at his numbers, he was 17 for 21, 201 yards, two touchdowns, interception, average 9.6 yards per attempt. Those are very good numbers. I mean, and especially considering what we were probably expecting from Austin Appleby. Those are great numbers. I'm not that optimistic about things entirely, though, simply because, you know, next week they're on the road against LSU. And as we saw against South Carolina, Florida still didn't really run the ball all that well. Jordan Scarlett ran the ball well. He finished with 134 yards on 20 carries. But as a team, Florida still, you know, 4.6 yards per carry. And you go on the road to LSU, LSU is going to take your run game away. And they're going to force Austin Appleby to beat you or beat them. And I feel like Appleby against South Carolina had a good enough game to help Florida get past the Gamecocks, even though, you know, they still only scored 20 points. It's not like it was they lit up the scoreboard. But I just think going next week, I doubt Austin Appleby is going to be able to have that same kind of performance against LSU. And to me, that's a huge problem because, as we've talked about, Florida's run game has struggled all year. It's really struggled against good defenses. So we can be sure it's going to struggle next week against LSU, leaving the game in Appleby's hands, which I am not very confident about going forward. So the East is it's going to be a fun few weeks coming up because I think Florida's going to lose next week and leave things wide open for Tennessee.
Yeah, Florida was zone reading and bubble screening South Carolina to death. And South Carolina's defense, I feel confident saying, is a good two grades below LSU in all facets of playing defense. In particular, the one thing that stood out to me was that it looked like Florida knew that South Carolina's secondary, not so good at the tackles. at bringing the ball carriers to the ground, because it was a lot of, you know, whether you're looking at Tyreek Cleveland, Antonio Callaway, Siante Lewis. Like, Siante Lewis, I think, is playing really well over the last couple weeks. But it was, let's get these guys out in space and give them a shot against South Carolina corners. And they were just winning those battles. It was a well-executed game plan. I just don't think that those kinds of wrinkles are sustainable, particularly going to Baton Rouge to play LSU.
No. I mean, I think they'll probably try to keep a lot of that same game plan going. I just don't think it's going to be nearly as effective, because LSU's defense is just, like you said, a good two grades better than South Carolina's. And South Carolina's defense isn't horrible.
No. I just think that the athleticism and the experience and the versatility, everything, like, you don't, there's no player.
There's no Arden Key.
There's no Arden Key or Jamal Adams, you know? Yeah. Maybe even Kendall Beckwith, like, for sure.
Jamal Adams tackled somebody out of the secondary.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think about LSU? 38-10 winners against Arkansas on the road. I was impressed by this performance. I certainly didn't call this performance. Leonard Fournette and Darius Geis making Arkansas's defense look very, very much
very. That Arkansas's run defense is, like, historically bad this year.
Like, that, I did not think that was going to happen, but I should have, because all these teams that Arkansas is beating are not good rushing offenses, and these teams that are getting it done seem to be able to move the ball on the ground. I should have seen this coming.
Yeah, probably. I should have too. And I think the one thing that game, like, cemented for me, and it was something that kind of maybe came into question after the loss to Alabama, but LSU is the second best team in the SEC, which isn't saying as much this year as it would in most other years. But I think from what we've seen all around now at this point of the year, I feel confident saying LSU is the second best team in the SEC.
I agree with you. All right, let's get to the carnage. 2, 3, 4, all going down. And it's confusing because we've got 1,000 rankings, like whether it's the AP or the coaches or the college football playoff. Whatever order it is, Clemson and Michigan and Washington all lost.
Uh-huh.
Significant. Very significant, and I've got. I want to go in two different directions here. Are you more interested in watching the Big Ten East play out, or the plight of the Clemson Tigers and the Louisville Cardinals? Because I feel like those are two different discussions. I think that there's each of those conferences should expect to have one team in the playoff, but boy, things look weird right now, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, we are looking at a situation where we could finally see teams that don't win conferences get in. And I say finally, like the playoffs been around for decades. But it's, you just look and it's like after Washington's loss, that really throws that whole thing up in the air, although I still think Washington has a good playoff spot. But as far as which one I'm more interested in, I think I lean Big Ten just because that's what I've always, you know, I've grown up in Big Ten country, so it's more interesting to me. But I feel like the funniest thing is, you know, Washington lost, Michigan lost, Clemson lost. All three still control their fate.
Yep.
As far as winning their conferences go. As long as they win out, they're going to win their conference. Ohio State, which came in the week number 50 at number 5, wins by 59 points, watches its arch rival lose in Michigan. And Ohio State probably lost more than any of those other three teams this week, because now Ohio State no longer has any control. If Ohio State beats Michigan at the end of the year, unless Penn State loses to Rutgers or Michigan State in the next 2 weeks, Ohio State's not playing for a Big Ten title.
Right.
And that hinders its college football playoff chip or odds. So to me, that was the funniest thing of the weekend. In the week we see three top four teams lose, it's the number 5 team that probably suffered the most because of it.
So Ohio State 9-1, Michigan 9-1, Penn State 8-2. All of the teams have one conference loss. Penn State's to Michigan, Ohio State's to Penn State, and Michigan's to Iowa. And when you paint out all of the different scenarios, each of these teams have two games left. The most likely scenarios seem to be Penn State winning, Tom.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if I would say most likely. I think, yeah, I guess you're right, because, I mean, I guess you could say Michigan, Ohio State's kind of a coin flip, right?
Michigan, Ohio State's a coin flip. I favor Penn State to win both of its remaining games. And Penn State wins both of its remaining games, Ohio State's out.
Yeah, I think the odds of Penn State winning the last two games are better than 50-50. But I will say, Penn State's offensive line on Saturday against Indiana started reverting back to the Penn State offensive line we saw from the last few years. Like, it was not pretty. They had a rough game against an Indiana defensive front that isn't very good. I mean, it's better than you'd probably think, but it's not great. And I worry, you know, because we saw Michigan State go kill Rutgers. I mean, Michigan State's still not a good football team, but when I look at Penn State's offensive line and I look at Michigan State's defensive line, I see something that could be problematic for Penn State in a couple weeks.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
How hilarious. This is just.
This is mean.
Just,
I know.
Let's just dream. Okay. How about this, okay? Michigan State was horrible this year, all right? It lost to Michigan. It, you know, it feels bad, but it gets its revenge at the end of the year when Ohio State beats Michigan, but then Michigan State beats Penn State to send Ohio State to the playoff and Michigan goes home. That could be Michigan State's one chance at revenge this year. So
here's how it goes. The games will be played at the same time. And Michigan State will be in Happy Valley, and Michigan will be in Columbus, and the whole world's going to be scoreboard watching. It's going to be exciting as hell, and it's going to end with a delay of game coming out of a timeout after Penn State as they spike the ball on fourth down.
That's all these little side stories like that that have made the Big Ten more interesting to me than the ACC race. But having said that, I mean, I think part of what ruins the ACC race is the way that the schedules work. I mean, this week Louisville's playing Houston, and Clemson has Wake Forest on the road, but then it finishes with South Carolina in a non-conference game.
Louisville's done. Louisville's ACC schedule's done.
So yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like the Big Ten finishes with these teams playing one another, whereas in the ACC they played each other like a month ago. So it kind of takes some of the appeal of that race out, because it's like you don't get to really see them playing each other at this point. And also, I mean, I don't, if Louisville beats Houston, what is that really worth at this point?
That's a very fair point. How about this? If you're looking at the argument for a Louisville over Clemson in the eyes of the committee, what do you give some credence there? Because Lamar Jackson's been great, but if we're going to talk about playoff resume, outside of the good loss argument, like, hey, our only loss of the season was in Death Valley by one score at the very end of the game, that's like the best loss, blah, 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 blah. But like, I don't know how many good wins Louisville has this year, with the Florida State route at home early in the year being really the only thing that it can bring to the committee.
That's its only really good win. I mean, I think the committee is going to have a very hard time putting Louisville in over Clemson, just simply based on that head-to-head result, unless Louisville, completely falls apart, or Clemson falls apart, and then, if they lose to Wake Forest, and then Wake Forest is suddenly your Atlantic Division champion, or so, I don't know, but I just think that the fact that they've lost to Clemson, and like you said, they have that Florida State win, but let's play a game called Let's Figure Out What Louisville's Second Best Win Is.
No, let's play that game, because
it's not Charlotte.
Uh-uh.
It's not Syracuse.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
It's probably not Marshall.
No.
So is it Duke, NC State, or Wake Forest?
Let's see. So of all those teams that you mentioned, Duke is the only one with a win against a current top 25 team.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh has more wins against ranked teams than Louisville does.
Oh, Pitt's wrecking the top 10, bro. Pitt's got wins over Clemson and Penn State. You can't mess with Pitt. But I mean, beating Houston and Kentucky to finish will boost Louisville's resume a little bit. It's just the Houston win is no longer near as valuable as it would have been or we thought it would be at the beginning of the year when it was beating Oklahoma. And Kentucky may be a team that's going bowling, but it's still, you know, it's still Kentucky. So it's not like the committee's going to be like, well.
Yeah. If Clemson will get a chance to provide the magical 13th data point, as long as they're able to beat Wake Forest, as Tom mentioned, they would finish in a tie at 7-1 in the Atlantic Division, winning the head-to-head to make it to the ACC Championship game, where they will meet either Virginia Tech or North Carolina. Now, the Tar Heels lost to Duke. Virginia Tech going up against Georgia Tech, a Yellow Jackets team that was playing backups at nearly every major offensive skill position. And they beat Virginia Tech in something that is shout out to the key play and Virginia Tech fan site. This was one of the most apt descriptions. He said, Georgia Tech coming out and punching Virginia Tech in the mouth with all of their backups was like the scene in Varsity Blues, the game after they went Mox took everybody to the strip club. They just sat back, they had no energy, and they just got stuck. And they had no response. It was a
was Justin Fuente the stripper? Because in Varsity Blues, when they go to the strip club, it turns out the stripper is their teacher.
No, it's Frank Beamer.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. All right, so here's what we've got. They're both 5-2. Virginia Tech obviously has the head-to-head here. Virginia Tech plays Virginia. North Carolina plays NC State. So we believe that the Hokies will be making it. I favor the Hokies here, right? Obviously.
Yeah. But, I mean, whoever it is, again, it's not really a team that's going to boost anybody's resume.
Goodness gracious. All right, so as we look over to the Big 12, Oklahoma State, I owe you another apology. Because ever since I called this team sorry on this very podcast.
You didn't call them. You called them sorry ass. You didn't just say they were sorry. You called them the sorry ass Cowboys.
Yo, ever since I said that, Oklahoma State's been averaging nearly 10 yards per play on offense.
Yeah. I mean, they'll do that. I mean, they've probably been giving up about 8 on defense.
Mason Rudolph is cooking. Oklahoma State's won 6 games in a row. They have the head-to-head advantage against West Virginia, who also has 1 loss in conference play. Oklahoma currently sitting up at the top. We've got the big finale for the Sooners starts this coming weekend. Oklahoma won 45-24 against Baylor this past week. Where are you at with the Sooners now healthy? They got Mixon and Piran running. Defense still has its own questions and concerns. Do you think that they're going to be able to finish 9-0? And even as we talk about all these moving pieces on the chessboard of college football, all of a sudden an Oklahoma team who's went 9-0 in Big 12 play and has a loss to Ohio State and then another one in the season opener to Houston. I got yelled at for saying that Oklahoma still had a chance a couple weeks ago, Tom, but doesn't it look like the Sooners might be able to play their way into the playoff?
Yeah, I think Tuesday's ranking, not tonight. I think when they release the new rankings on Tuesday, that will probably give us the best indication of what Oklahoma's chances are. Because as we've seen through the first 2 weeks of the rankings, the Big 12 isn't getting a lot of respect. I mean, West Virginia was ranked, 16th, even though it's 8-1?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so it's like, okay, if Oklahoma goes and beats West Virginia next week on the road, it's impressive, but it's clearly not that great of a team, according to the committee. Oklahoma State was, 8-2, is only 13. Oklahoma was not even in the top. Was Oklahoma 11 or 10?
They were
11. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, there's no Big 12 team in the top 10. And I think Oklahoma gets in the top 10 this week, but will it be closer to 4 or 10? I think it's probably going to be in that 8-9 range, which will further point out that the committee just really doesn't respect the Big 12. Now, granted, I don't think we can eliminate Oklahoma from consideration simply because if Washington, say, loses to Washington State in the Apple Cup, I don't think a two-loss Washington – if the Cougars then go on to win the Pac-12, a two-loss Washington State team with a loss to Eastern Washington is not getting in the playoff. And – if Oklahoma goes 9-0 in the Big 12, if it finishes up with a win on the road against West Virginia and then comes home and beats Oklahoma State, if you've got a two-loss Pac-12 champion, then – because I still really do believe that the committee is going to prefer conference champions. And if it has a choice over a two-loss conference champion and a one-loss Big Ten or ACC team that didn't even play for its conference title, I think it's going to go for the Big 12 or the conference champion. So I would say Oklahoma is definitely alive. I just don't think it has the greatest odds.
It's Oklahoma. I think we cannot ignore
that's the
thing. That.
If that's, yeah, it's got the brand name too. Like if it's West Virginia in the very same spot with the very same resume.
West Virginia's trash, though. No, I'm just kidding. I can't just sit out here hating on Big 12 teams. Just pick out new ones.
Or even if it's just Oklahoma State and not Oklahoma, but it's the same exact resume, I would say it probably doesn't have a chance. But the fact that it's Oklahoma gives it a chance.
Last year, Oklahoma started in the very first playoff rankings at number 15. Where did it finish, Tom?
Number 3.
Yeah, it started at number 14 this year.
Finish. Yep. So, I mean, I can't rule it out. I don't see it happening, but I can't. It's foolish to completely rule it out at this point.
I got yelled at by Palm. Now I'm just rooting for it so that I can have that.
Well, you know, what would settle this debate is if Oklahoma goes on the road and loses to West Virginia. That would just make it all a moot point.
That would make it all a moot point.
But okay. Then is West Virginia suddenly a playoff contender? Because then West Virginia is sitting at 9-1 with a win over Oklahoma. Now it finally has a resume win.
West Virginia trying to lose last week gave me all of the anxiety about believing in that team.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned last week, you know, on the picks pod, it's the defense that it's kind of sprung a leak in recent weeks. Although I thought the defense played well against Texas. And I picked Texas to win. That was my lock of the week. So, I mean, I was obviously very wrong about that. But that's the thing with this West Virginia team. It's a good team. And it's just not – at no point do you watch it and think that it's an elite team. Like, if West Virginia somehow ends up winning the Big 12 and gets to the playoff, it's like the number 4 seed. Is Alabama beating it by less than 40?
No.
So it's like, and it's
nah, that's a -43.5 point spread to bet on.
Yeah, and West Virginia fans can take offense to that if they want to. It's like I said, I think you're a good team. You're just not an elite team. You don't strike me as a playoff team, even though you might at the end of the year be worthy of playoff consideration. You're just not the kind of team I think should be in the playoff.
Not a playoff team. But certainly a fun team that has continued to improve as the season has progressed. USC looks damn good right now, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Darnold.
Yay! Is that a Tom original?
I guess. I don't know. Okay. I didn't actually write that cartoon, so I don't know if I could consider it an original. Yeah, no, USC... I'm telling you, I feel like, especially now that it beat Washington in my upset of the week, which I called, which it turns out I could have been right by picking 4 or 5 other upsets. So it kind of takes some of the pleasure out of that one. But I think that could be the first of 2 games we see between Washington and USC.
Right. Okay. So Colorado, they need 1 Colorado loss and 1 Utah loss. You need them both. They play each mm-hmm. other. Very, very possible, no doubt. But yeah, if USC gets back to the Pac-12 championship game, yo.
That is not a team I want to deal with.
Yo. Much would rather play Utah or Colorado right now.
Oh, very much. And I mean, I think it's possible because I think Colorado's in trouble this week against Washington State. And then if it could beat Utah, I think USC is winning out against UCLA and Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, especially if we're just talking about the Pac-12, it's just... You know, they're going to go play this reeling UCLA team. Yeah, I am very, very interested. I would love to see this USC team again. What do you like or what alarms should Washington fans be having from that performance, especially coming from someone you who predicted the upset?
Simply that, I mean, what USC did, it took away Washington's run game. It took away Myles Gaskin, and it said, you know what, Jake Browning, you're really good, and you have some good receivers. Try to beat us by yourself. We, by the way, we have a pretty good secondary. We got that Adoree Jackson guy and some other dudes who can cover. And if I'm Washington and I'm just thinking in the future, I still think, you know, in the Pac-12 North, I still think Washington's better than Washington State.
I do too.
I think Washington's going to beat Washington State at the end of the year. And I think Washington is going to play for Pac-12 title. And if they don't play USC, I think Washington's going to win the Pac-12 and probably end up in the playoff. But what I would worry about if I'm Washington from that loss against USC is if Washington gets to the playoff now, it's probably going to do so as a four seed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who is it going to have to play in that first game?
Alabama.
And Alabama will be able to do everything USC just did to you and mm-hmm. probably do a better job of it too. So I think that'd be my one takeaway. If I'm Washington, it's like I'm not worried about missing the playoff because I still think if I win out, I'm reaching the playoff. It's just I think my hopes of winning in the playoff took a huge hit on Saturday night.
Michigan, to cycle back to the Big Ten before we let you go, Tom, Michigan with this loss, I want to know what are you seeing from this game that should be very concerning, particularly if Michigan, you know, we were talking about all the different Big Ten East scenarios. You know, I think there's like 22, I guess I don't have the probabilities in my head of how many different outcomes there are, but Michigan has a bunch of ways to win the Big Ten East. And they all include beating Ohio State and Columbus. What from this loss should be concerning, particularly as we look ahead to that matchup in Columbus against an Ohio State team that's been hanging 50 on everybody?
The thing with Michigan is they've been scoring a lot of points for most of the year. I mean, they didn't score a lot of points against Iowa, obviously, but they've scored a lot of points from week to week. It's just they've never really been an explosive offense.
No.
And we saw, you know, earlier against the season against Wisconsin, they only scored 14, but that included three missed field goals. So really it was like 23 points. And we saw against Iowa on Saturday, they were only able to score 13 points. So we know their defense is fantastic. It's just my one concern about them going forward, and it showed up, you know, on a road game. Road games on Saturday nights in the Big Ten are pretty much death for everybody. Just ask Ohio State, which lost to Penn State. But going forward, the offense just doesn't have that huge playmaker. Michigan needs to put together long drives. And that was my one concern in its matchup against Alabama is how many long drives will Michigan be able to put together against that defense without exploding for a big play like it's going to need to actually beat Alabama. And that's the one thing I saw on Saturday night. They lack the big play. They lack somebody on offense who, when that team was struggling to move the ball against an Iowa defense that's not horrible, but it's not great, they lack that playmaker. And that's what really concerns me going forward. It's like Jabril Peppers and that defense need to score for them in those kind of situations. And if they don't, I don't really trust anybody in the offense to be able to do it. And I think that's Michigan's biggest problem going forward.
Mm. He is Tom Fornelli. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. He is just...
I've taken improv.
He is just absolutely a champion of everything. thank you so much for your time. You'll be back at the end of the week so that we can break down more games against the spread. We've got the weekend coming up. The SEC edition will be extra special this week. Are you excited for it?
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. I've taken improv.